currently serve as a partner at Social Venture Partners, wherein we donate our time, money, and energy towards causes we believe in. And outside of that, professionally, do some angel investing. So I've done about 14 companies personally thus far.
He's been involved quite heavily in the Calcutta startup scene, as he mentioned.
I feel your productivity hacks are absolute gold.
Memories in school are so deeply rooted that even when you forget them, there are instances where you might meet a friend and they might take you on memory lane. You're in school, college, first internship, they're very foundational.
If you have a product, how many people have you spoken to?
I like to say Geeta is a podcast, right? And Arjun is the host and Krishna is answering the questions.
I don't believe in number of years of experience, but always believe in experiences per year. Michael Phelps is the most decorated Olympian of all times. In his book, No Limits, like his autobiography, Michael Phelps writes that he went 5 years without missing a single day of training. And for him, I believe training was twice a day. During that training phase, he also had a shoulder break or a shoulder injury, dislocation, and patta bandh ke, he was in the pool swimming, because apparently when you don't swim, your body goes a couple days back in terms of speed and whatnot, right?
Trust the process that you have mapped out in terms of your goal.
An idea is never complete. By nature of being an idea, it's never complete. It is always being iterated on. So the most important thing is to start. Hi everyone, I am Karan Kishorpuria. I'm currently the executive director at Regal Resources. Regal is an agro-processing company which converts corn to make starch for food, pharma, textile sector, typically selling B2B. We have about 10 products right now, and we are currently expanding capacity and expanding product line in time to come. Outside of this, also run two small businesses in the managed office and hospitality space. One of them is the managed office one is what I started. The hospitality one is one that as my family got separated, it came as a part of the family separation pool. And make some content on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, have a personal blog as well on Medium where I write long form content. And really passionate about service and overall love living life to the fullest by reading books, meeting people, meeting interesting people and having conversations like these. So looking forward to an amazing conversation and what we have in store.
Just a little bit on Karan. Karan has been instrumental in getting this podcast up and underway to a certain extent. He's been involved quite heavily in the Calcutta startup scene, as he mentioned. So a lot of the founder connects who we've had are through Karan. Directly or indirectly. In fact, just earlier today, thanks to Karan, we got some, undeserved fame, lucky fame, right place, right time fame. And hopefully we are going to be getting a lot more of those founders to you as well. And we're going to be putting up the pictures and stuff on Instagram once I get them or once we get them, if we get them.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so big thanks to Karan in advance for directly / indirectly being quite influential in making this podcast where it is today and getting us our founders.
I think that's way too kind and generous, but I'll take it. But that's again way too kind. And I'm glad this is a medium now wherein founders have a touch point where they can share their story, their journey, and more people can learn, be inspired, and also build in India because we are an amazing country.
Karan, how old are you?
Akhil, answering your question, right? I'm 25 right now, but I recently put up a LinkedIn post about this, that I don't believe in number of years of experience, but always believe in experiences per year. So that's a North Star metric that I always chase since I've been growing up, I still am. And whenever I'm hiring, when I'm looking to add like core set of friends, etc., always look for that metric, not years of experience, but number of experiences per year.
Why was I as a 25-year-old so scared? And why are people at the ages of 25, 21, 24, 23, 18, 16, 15, right? When Zuckerberg can start building at 18, when, you know, Buffett can start handling money at the age of 17. What is my fear? And why are people afraid, Karan? Why are you not afraid?
So I am afraid. Like, you know, and anybody who says they aren't, I feel that it's a lie that they are sharing on camera or to someone. So how I look at it is there are two types of Karans, right? One is the real Karan, the Karan who thinks what he thinks when he's sleeping in bed or when he's alone, etc. And the second Karan is the ideal Karan, who Karan wants to be, right? And in between that real Karan and the ideal Karan is what is fear. So I'll not say that I'm not afraid, I am. But Imran Khan, I think, said this quote that first, prove yourself that you are the best, because the rest of your life is going to go proving that to others. And if you think you can, you can. And if you think you can't, right? So for me, what happened is when I was in class 7-8, there was a small debate happening in my school. And in our school, debate was a very big thing. So I remember the house opened up for giving a point. This was actually in class 6. I remember I was in shorts that day. So the house opened up to put a point. And I had a point to make. And I thought about that point ever since the debate started. And at that time, I was terribly afraid of public speaking. And I remember one after the other, we had about 20 minutes of open house where the house, when anybody in the audience could go and say a point. People were going one by one. And I was just thinking, kare nahi kare, because what if I fumble? What if I make myself look stupid? And I just bit my teeth and I went up. And I made my point and I did not say it very well. Like, you know, probably stumbled, fumbled. Some people didn't understand what I was saying. But when I came back home, I still remember, maybe it's been 12, 13 years since, calling my mom and telling her that I was so afraid to speak in public. But today I went on stage and said what I had to do. And I feel so much better. And since then, today, I've given over 75 talks, 2 TED Talks. And whenever I'm going to stage, right, I'm always remembering that Karan in class 6 who took that leap of faith. That's one. And secondly, I also feel that when you're growing up, you should have a set of friends or family. And if you don't have that, unfortunate, but you can find random people on the internet as well who back you and believe you. For example, if any of my friends are looking to do a pod, an NGO, a startup, etc., I always tell them, Karna bhai, like what can happen? It can fail. And failure is actually the best teacher, because I've failed plenty in my life as well. So I feel that you have to take that leap of faith, find those people who are willing to be your superstar cheerleaders. And at the end, just remember, this is not, you're not fighting for prime minister elections in India, right? This is a normal, most people are trying normal things. And if they fail, so be it. You'll move on and do better things in life. So that's how I look at the being afraid part. And I also feel that the only person that you're actually comparing yourself to should be yourself yesterday. So Vishrut, myself, Akhil, we all are hardwired differently. We've got different upbringings. But who I actually want to compare myself to is Karan yesterday. And we'll get more to that, right? Of how I do that, actually. I have a documented process of how that's happening in time to come.
Just adding on to that little bit on school and debate. So Karan and I went to the same school until I was in the 9th grade, at least. So debate or house debates, and you know, I think schools in India have houses and 4 houses, usually red, green, yellow, and blue. Don't ask me why, but this is just the way it is. And I think most schools in India have that. And for us, debating was a big deal. I remember I was in the 8th grade and I got onto the debate team, and it was like a, oh my God, I have made it moment in my head. And speaking of the shorts and why 6th grade in shorts makes the whole connection even more stronger is because I think it was from the 8th grade where we switched from having to wear shorts to having to wear trousers to school.
Good times.
Dude, I mean, like it's been, I think school is now a different place. Okay. Like the whole, they've added a new section apparently, like there's 60 new section, more kids.
New buildings. And I also feel that memories in school are so deeply rooted that even when you forget them, there are instances that you might meet a friend and they might take you on memory lane. And school, like if you're in school, college, first internship, they're very foundational, heavy parts to life. So yeah, I remember.
Yesterday I met a friend of mine who was with me since we were 2. We were like together since nursery.
Wow.
And he is now in Canada. And he was down in town and we met up for lunch and stuff. And you know, I still remember what that guy used to bring for his tiffin. And like I have that picture is so clear in my head, even though it's been upwards of 15 years since that picture has sort of like, you know, occurred. So yeah, I completely relate to that. I think there's a lot foundationally that works in our favor in schools and a lot foundationally that doesn't work in our favor. And I think there is a major thing that we realized through the podcast, through talking to people and through our own experiences that schooling in India is deeply flawed to some extent, especially being in an all boys school and things like that, because we have so many people. So I also remember this same, very similar incident where not even in front of a, you know, auditorium full of people that did I have to go and speak, I had to ask a question in class to my teacher. And I think I fumbled or something like that. And I was made fun of that entire class to the extent that I remember when I went to Singapore, the teachers being like, you know, you're all good in terms of what your work and all is, but you're not, you don't speak enough in class. You're not participating. That was the first time we had things like, you know, what is your participation like in class? We had participation grades that were given to us in Singapore. But that's possible because there were also only like 16, 18, 20 people in a class. So there was a lot more resources. The teachers are better paid. You know, the classes were longer, lesser people. So, you know, those are things, those are metrics that can be measured when you have that level of resources. I think that today in India, we cannot do that simply because A, teachers are not paid enough. B, we don't allocate enough time. A 35-minute, 40-minute session in school is barely enough to cover the syllabus. I remember in our time only, our teachers were running every single time. Every year it used to be a race to finish the syllabus. So when you're so busy doing those, like as we spoke about today, man, roti, kapda, makan, internet. Syllabus hi jab tak khatam nahi hoga, to aage kaise badhenge?
Right. Basics. And you know, Vishnu, I have an interesting take on this, right? So I believe everything at some level is flawed and everything at some level also very beautiful. So I remember for the longest time when I was in university, for maybe 4.5 years, I used to wear a yin yang locket because it reminded me, right, that there's some good in the bad and there's some bad in the good. So you just have to find what you're looking for. So agreed that education in India is slightly flawed, right? And I think everywhere something or the other is amiss. 100%. But secondly, which I think is very important when it comes to education also, is education is what you make of it. So it can happen that two people went to the same school, university. One came out brilliant. One did not come out brilliant. For that moment, maybe 10 years later, it switches. So education is what you make of it. And secondly is so much of the education happens back at home with your friends, like, you know, with what you're consuming on the internet. Like the internet, I feel, is the second school with Instagram, Twitter, and all that good stuff. So being conscious, right, of how you're educating yourself in the school of life. And in the school of life, the actual school is maybe 6 hours a day. Then you have the sports and extracurriculars 2-3 hours a day. Then you have Instagram, YouTube, social media, which is 1 or 2 hours a day. Then some friends and family. So the school of life holistically is what shapes you up. And I agree that, you know, the basics are very important. And I too wish that Indian education was more holistic. And that's wherein I think universities like Ashoka, Flame, OP Jindal are actually nurturing those seeds to build more holistic education where people feel more, have more self-actualization, want to be change-making agents, and are able to think for themselves to contribute back to society once they make it big. So education is a whole podcast in itself, but India is at least progressing a little bit in that regard.
Let's expand on that. Let's continue this conversation, right? So I was watching this podcast of Nikhil Kamath. Okay, he's the founder of Zerodha and he runs a beautiful, beautiful podcast. And in that, they were talking about how Indian market is divided. So there's India 1. India 1 is the people who have north of 12 lakh rupees of household income. Then there is India 2, who are the people who come to these people's houses and work for them. And then there is India 3, which is an absolute, you know, the farmers and the really, really low paid people in India. India 1 comprises of 12 crore people, which is less than 10% of our population. That population is just making more than 12 lakh rupees. In that population, it can be divided into three different countries. There is a Singapore level population, which makes north of 40 lakh rupees a year in India. Then there is a full Poland in India, which makes north of 24 lakh rupees a year in India. And then there's a huge Mexico level population in India, which makes more than 12 lakh rupees, 12 to 24 lakh rupees, right? I feel when we discuss things like online education and when we discuss things like these things are available for free. They are. Internet is very cheap. But people don't know. People are not aware. You know, yesterday we were speaking to one of the people in our network. His name is Kontya. He's running a marketing agency. And he was talking about copywriting and how emails can be rewritten company on company basis. And I mentioned ChatGPT. I was like, you know, we have ChatGPT, we have Bing, we have X, Y, Z, Perplexity, name it, right? And you just go on that, it'll write for you. And he asked the question, how many people know? And ChatGPT has 100 million users, boo freaking who, it is a lot. 100 million is 10 crore people. 10 crore people is less than 8% of India's population, right? So why I am talking about this, let's talk about awareness. You are an angel investor. You are invested in 18, 19 different companies. Are these companies being born out of India 2, India 3? If they are not, how do we get companies born out of India 2, India 3? And what kind of education demographic can we provide the country that they go online, they start learning, they learn from the MITs and the Harvards, right? What do we do? Karan, I want your opinion on this.
That's a loaded question. And actually, I did see that podcast as well. Kishore Biyani was the one talking about the India 1, India 2, India 3, right? And he gave some interesting stats behind it. So definitely agree. So I'll look at it in two different parts. Number one is that, like for me, the direction you are going in matters a lot more than the speed at which you go. Because when you are going in a unilateral, like, you know, if you're going in the upward direction, and if you're doing slow progress, you tend to compound to a huge number because the base keeps increasing. Compared to if you go very fast and slow, then it doesn't go that way. So I feel India direction-wise has been going very well last 20 years with a strong GDP growth rate. Secondly, I feel a lot of people have got access to internet. They've got access to banking, UPI. They've got access to better health. Aadhaar has been a game changer. So on that regard, I think India is getting access, which is great. Now, number two is how do you get more people deeper access, better access, which is conversation number two, right? And that's where I think, so recently we had a small philanthropic event where we were doing a fundraiser, right? And the person speaking, his name was Ashish Dhawan. He's the founder of Ashoka University and 13 other universities and runs something called the Convergence Foundation. And before this was India's one of the top PE investors for the founder of Chris Capital. So Ashish was mentioning, I don't remember the exact stats, but the Indian government does so much philanthropy through taxpayer money. So the Indian government, it's not called philanthropy. They actually do so much development in the social sector through taxpayer money. And this is what we do. If I remember the stats correctly, philanthropy is less than 0.1% of what the Indian government does. So what I feel is that podcasts, Nikhil Kamath's, like, you know, what WTF, Instagram, YouTube, newsletters allow people of India 1 who have the early access to reach out to people in India 3 and make them aware, ye bhi hota hai duniya mein. Abhi tha na, that guy Ram Bhai Sariya, the guy who did the 75 hard challenge. If you guys didn't, I'm not sure if you followed him, but he went from 0 to 3.5 million followers, I believe, in 75 days. And he comes from some village in India. And he was doing something called 75 hard, which is a fitness challenge wherein it's five things, I believe. You have to read 10 pages a day, drink 4 liters of water, work out twice a day, wherein one workout has to be outdoors. You cannot drink alcohol, if I remember correctly, and you have to eat clean. And every day you have to take a progress picture. And after 75 days, you take the final picture, and more than physically, you transform mentally. So this guy from the village was doing this, and he started with this thing called Ram Ram Bhai Sariya. And it blew up on the internet, right? And Narendra Modi invited him during Swachh Bharat campaign and put up a video of this guy, Narendra Modi, our prime minister. So what I'm saying is that happened because India 1, I feel, made him aware. And India 1 was able to make him aware because infrastructure is developed that India 3 has some internet access. So that's the second thesis out there. And a quick third thing, right, in terms of startup building, I feel, see, you know, one challenge with startup building, right, is that you have to take a big risk because in the early days of startup building, you tend not to make money. You are sacrificing sweat equity and you're building for a passion, right? A lot of people in India 3 have to actually pay for their family, sister, brother, et cetera, et cetera. So sometimes, right, what I feel for India 3 is it might be better to actually focus on education, because no matter what cycle comes, who comes, education always remains with you. Number two is it helps if you are able to work at a top tier place because there's pedigree, and then choose to build a company, right? So I've invested in about 14 companies personally, and a few from the Northeastern Impact Fund, which I started when I was in college, right? And I'm not happy to note this, but not too many of them are coming from India 3. I would say most are coming from India 1 or India 2. But the good part is that increasingly more deal flow is coming from India 3. For example, I have invested in one company called eFeed, which basically is a technology company in the food space, which allows you to enhance productivity of cattle. And the founder's father was a farmer, so he understood that need. But he's no longer India 3. His father was in India 3. He's now moved to India 2 or India 1 because he's a mover and shaker in the world. So those are my two or three takes. And hopefully, if we talk 10 years from now, right, I'm dead certain that we'll see a lot more founders from India 3. One big reason being they come from such a hungry place, right, where they have not got that basics covered sometimes, is that when they do get the basics covered, itna hunger hai life mein ki kuch bada karke dikhana hai and kuch badal ke dikhana hai. Only this afternoon, I think, Vishwat and I were with someone who was a college school dropout and building a delivery app, doing 1.5 CR in revenue, profitable, who probably would belong to an India 2, maybe India 2.5, if we wouldn't say India 3. So in time, it'll become better, but lots of things happening for the positive direction in this space.
I think more than just India 2, India 3, you're kind of founders. I think the basics in roti, kapda, makan, internet, those are being solved for. Today, we have, even in India 2, 2.5, we have people who have that access. And today, I think thanks to Shark Tank and all these kind of shows, yeah, and you know, this word entrepreneurship is growing. As you said, the hunger is definitely increasing. There are people who are so hungry who are coming. You know, there's a whole load of different people out there, and we're hoping to maybe reach those kind of people and help them create value.
Absolutely.
And I think definitely, like, you know, being more aware, being able to, you know, go out and talk to different people, which again is something that's not inherently part of our culture. We, from a very young age, are taught kam bolo, kam ye suno zyada, don't speak unless spoken to. So we have this, we're created as very inhibited creatures. So I think the other thing that we have to understand when we're getting to this place where we are trying to go out of our comfort zones, like, for example, what we did this afternoon, where we were having an impromptu conversation in front of whatever 60 odd people. 6 months ago, I don't think I would have been able to do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't guess that, but that's good to know that journey has come.
Yeah, man. I was talking to Akhil about this once I got back, and I was like, dude, I don't think I'd have had the confidence or the knowledge to have a conversation off the fly. Like, we usually, like, you know, this is all off the fly, but the point is, you're in a setup, you're in the house, you know, anything, you know, is all editable, or something that you mess up can always be changed. We know each other, so that, you know, there's no pressure that way that, oh, you're going to judge me or anything like that.
Familiarity.
Familiarity, comfort zone. Okay, yes, the cameras are rolling, but I know today that I have final say of what goes out there. However, when I'm sitting in front of 60 people, if I mess up or if I say something that's incorrect, that's out there. Those 60 people have heard that information and reached their conclusions at that specific point in time. So knowing what's the right thing to say, how much to say, how much not to say, and growing up in an inhibited environment, I think there's a lot to do with just, you know, punching that ego and being like, listen, I get that we're coming from this thing where we've been told to speak less and all, but however, for this particular purpose that we're trying to achieve of going out there and being a mover and shaker and disrupting the world, we have to go and speak to as many people as we can.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Vishwat, interesting enough, I have like a I'm a big Steve Jobs fan. I know this afternoon also, I gave a few of his quotes, right? So one of his quotes, we've got it nicely printed in our office wall, which says, here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the round pegs in the square pegs in the round holes. And it ends by saying, right, only those who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do. And second to your point, strongly believe that nothing great in life happens in your comfort zone. For example, right, Michael Phelps is the most decorated Olympian of all times. In his book, No Limits, like his autobiography, Michael Phelps writes that he went 5 years without missing a single day of training. And for him, I believe training was twice a day. So that's 3,000 sessions without missing a single day of training. If I remember correctly, during that training phase, he also had a shoulder break or a shoulder injury.
Dislocation.
And patta bandh ke, he was in the pool swimming. Because apparently when you don't swim, your body goes a couple days back in terms of speed and whatnot, right? So that's what it takes. Comfort zone mein.
Kobe Bryant. You hear, I mean, you know, we've spoken about him before. In fact, this Steve Jobs quote is sort of what inspired us to find founders. Like, you know, let's find the crazy ones. Let's find the people who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world. And let's interact with that and understand, you know, where are you getting the self-belief?
Yeah.
Like, for Kobe Bryant, for that matter, he was like, you know, I used to wake up at 3, go train at 4, and that way I can get an extra session in.
Yeah.
So, you know, excellence requires that. Dude, it's not. I know you've woken up early for a fair amount of times. There are times when it's not easy. I enjoy waking up early, and yet there are times when at like 5 in the morning that you just do not want to get out of bed.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, that comfort of just being in that, you know, space where it's dark, it's cozy, you're just happy in that space. But the moment you push yourself and you get out there and you do that thing, the feeling that you get, not even maybe immediately after, but in the long run, it's always going to help you.
Yeah.
It's reps, right? So Vishrut and I, we think of, let's start a podcast, right? And then it takes us a month to actually start getting going. When we start getting going, then we press the record button and it's silence. We don't know what to talk about. Then the first one, we try to make notes. Okay, fine. We'll make notes and we'll say this stuff. We say that and it's robotic. It's like all of it is pre-written and there's no feeling, no organic, nothing. It's unhearable. And the constant and you know, so like literally we used to make fun of ourselves that while recording you get an audio graphic and every used to look like a bug. And we were like, oh, yahan pe bug hai, yahan pe bug hai, yahan pe bug hai. There's an here, right? And then reps and more reps. And we used to record day by day, then discard some of our recordings and then record more topics, more research. We noticed that as time went on, whatever we were doing, at least the parts where we speak, we needed no edits. It had become, we could go on and do an impromptu chat, right? And it didn't come from just being good at it. We got a little better. Good is like still way down the line. It's too prideful. We got a little better to do impromptu things. And today Vishrut does this incredible thing and he gets on stage on an IIT Kharagpur event. And it's phenomenal, right? It's amazing. It's getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper in this world to try and get these reps in. In fact, to do a podcast, all you need is a phone, which is already in your pocket. To do a YouTube channel, all you need is a phone, which is already in your pocket. To educate yourself, all you need is a phone, which is already in your pocket, right? Why aren't people doing it more though? Even though there are people doing it, how do we get people to believe that it's actually accessible? Because see, when you needed factories, right? Industrial revolution happens and you're doing this incredible thing with corn processing. But if I wish to set up a corn processing plant, I need money and I need a lot of money and I need someone to trust me with that money. I need a bank to tell me, okay, here are your 10 CR, 20 CR, 30 CR, whatever it takes. I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to leverage capital. How do we get people to start leveraging technology more?
Yeah, so So I look at it in this realm that a lot of people who are younger and maybe in our generation, right, between 20 and 40 or 20 and 35 maybe, who have been born with technology, with social media, with this leverage as a normal thing for them, they are also very attuned to short-term boosts. Like, you know, kya abhi like kar rahe Instagram mein, abhi post dala hai, abhi badhiya lag raha hai mereko. So they are very used to getting that short-term validation, right? And I don't know if it's the correct stat, but there's a famous founder called Alex Lieberman who founded Morning Brew, which is a newsletter-based subscription app which gives you news in a funny, short manner every morning. So Alex, in one of his podcast episodes, solo podcast episodes called Founders Journal, mentioned that these many people start a podcast. These many people end after podcast number 3. These many people go to podcast number 10. These many people go to 25. And then you have the Tim Ferriss's, you have the Peter Attia's, you have the maybe the Joe Rogan's of the world who are actually able to move beyond the valley of latent potential, which is where what is happening is much less than what you expect to happen. And they can push through it over time. And then what is happening becomes better than what you expect to happen. And you can get a Spotify deal with $100 million, right? So I feel the challenge lies in a lot of people are very used to short-term boosts. The second thing is, just because I hear someone's story, right, on YouTube, I have no idea of the grind that they've put behind the scene. For example, case in point is Casey Neistat. Casey is one of the most popular YouTubers in the world, right? So Casey, he was doing daily vlogs. He did 800 plus daily vlogs before he blew up on YouTube. Just imagine 800 days vlogging. And it came to a point that when he was sharing on one interview that I stopped it after a point in time because when my kid would run around the room, I would want him to run a certain way because I'm not thinking about him running. I'm thinking about how it would look on my vlog, right? So everything, my day centered around that 10, 12 minute piece of video I would upload online. So what I'm saying is a lot fewer people actually know what the grind is on the back end. And last but not the least, it's a boon that we have tools like you know, cameras, iPhones, which can record so cleanly, but it also causes a lot more competition and you're competing for people's energy, right? On their time and their attention. So there might be 10 podcasts out there, which Vishwath can listen to tonight, but he chooses to listen to this one, the Thought Bistro, because he feels that like the hosts have spent time curating interesting guests, having interesting conversation, making a strong edit with sound, technology, etc. So I think if you want people's time, energy, attention, though it's become easier, it's become a lot harder in that element because you're competing with a lot more things and not just in your zone, but also beyond, be it Instagram Reels and beyond. So yeah, that's how I would look at it.
I feel the competition a little like, because it is so easy, people like to believe that there is more competition than there is. You know, like you say, if you make 10 episodes, you are in the top 3% podcast. If you make 20 episodes, you're in the top 1% podcast. The moment you cross 30 episodes, you are in the top 1% of those top 1% podcasts because people just quit. And I also feel people don't know how to monetize this. People don't know how to make money from this. People know, okay, I can make content. And I'll take your example, right? You're talking about Casey. So Casey has this very famous video in which he's like, I didn't know I can make money from YouTube. And I had already gathered some, you know, 100 million views behind me. So I switched on the monetization on YouTube. And what happened is first month, I made $3,000. And I looked at my family and I'm like we have food on the table. It's crazy. Then next month, I made $30,000. And I didn't even know what to say. He's like, we're rich. And after that, there were 20 people running behind me, paying me $30,000 for 15 seconds just to say their names. He's like, they didn't want me. They wanted my audience, right? And he's like, I didn't know. I spent 3 years of my life not knowing I could have monetized it. I just find it very, very fascinating how the world works, right? It's more, the fear is overblown, I feel.
So Akhil, I have a very strong thesis point on this. I do create content on the site that I've been creating on LinkedIn for a while. And I'm a very small community, like maybe 12,000 people are following now on the LinkedIn, like my personal profile. But what I've seen meeting people either full-time in the content space or full-time in the entrepreneurship space is that people want two things, right? Number one is they want great product. Number two is they want distribution for their product. So a lot of entrepreneurs today want to become creators because they have the product, but they want to sell it in a broader and bigger market. And a lot of creators want to become entrepreneurs because they have distribution, but don't know how to monetize the distribution through product or service. And that's where I feel the entrepreneur, right, who is making content and is an entrepreneur, is the new age persona that a lot of people like the Beer Biceps, the Raj Shamanis, the Ankur Varikus, Sahil Blooms of the world are doing. And to a certain extent, it was done 10 years ago by the Gary V's, the Casey Neistats. But now the number of people doing it has just increased because the number of brands willing to take a punt on you has also increased. But then again, it comes back to the original point that you have to do it for the long term. I've got 12,000 followers, and I remember the first 500 people, it took me maybe 2 years to get them. The first 5,000 took me another 2 years. The next 5,000 took me a year. And now, like, you know, I'm expecting 5,000 to happen in a couple months. So as long as you play the long game, compound, do it for the right reasons and not to monetize first, I think it's fine. And do not compare yourself to somebody else, because for that one creator who's made it big by, say, making vlogs, fitness content, doing podcasts, there are thousands of others who have not made it big and you just don't know about them. So you feel that, oh, why am I not growing as fast as this person? That's a separate conversation, and you can do some analysis, feedbacking, etc. But what should actually matter is, how can I make my product better? How can I take better feedback and do it a lot cleaner? Give my audience what they want. So that's what I would focus on. But to your point, agree that it's not easy, but you have to play the long game for it to become easier.
I'm going to go back to a point that Karan made today to one of the people who asked him a question about their product. And he was like, you know what? If you have a product, how many people have you spoken to? Have you spoken to at least 100 people? Then we again go back to this whole thing about volume. And he went that, okay, go to three corporates and say, I'm going to offer you the product for free. Use the product for free. And the only catch is you have to give me solid feedback. Go to the next three people and say, I will charge you an absolute bare minimum amount. Take feedback from them and ask them, what if you charged them 10x of that? So, you know, he gave a very practical example to someone. And I'm saying this not as any, like, you know, anything to sort of boost Karan up. It was something that I really thought about in a way. And I was like, yeah, this makes so much sense that, you know, you have so many people out there. Today in India, we have 140 crore people where, you know, it's not something where we're in any dearth of people. So unless you go out and speak to people and actively take feedback and not just send survey links, which people are just going to fill in for the sake of filling in, it's more than just data points on a stat sheet, right? It is actual data that you can use in ways. So in fact, today someone came up to me, he's like, hey, I've started a podcast on gaming and it's been running for 4 months, but I don't know what to do because I don't know how to edit. And I was like, dude, there is so many things to do. There are, you know, open source applications. I was like, I literally gave him our example and I was like, listen, you give me a call. I will give you all the things that are required. You will not need to put in a single penny of your money. And he's like, okay, what camera do you use? What microphone do you use? I was like, this microphone right here cost 2000 rupees. My phone was the one I already had. And this tripod here cost like 150 rupees. So like, that's all the amount of money you need to spend on equipment. And you even don't even need to spend that. You can just use your phone and that's good enough.
So I feel people get lost in the detail, right?
Dude, we were lost in the detail.
Yeah.
Akhil and I have spent 1.5 months before we switched to video being like, okay, we need a camera, we need an editor, we need X, Y, Z. Like, we were in a full thing that, okay, for moving the video podcasts from audio, again, even before we started audio, dude, we were like, you know, we need mics, we need this, we need so much stuff. It's all about just getting started.
Agreed. And bolte na usme, an idea is never complete. By nature of being an idea, it's never complete. It is always being iterated on. So the most important thing is to start. And the second thing to your point, right? When people ask, how do you do this? How do you do that? My first thing is, have you Googled? Have you tried figuring it out yourself before approaching? Because if you have, no problem. Then let's say it, because it'll be an interesting conversation. And I don't want to know what your initial thinking was and why you couldn't get to where you're wanting to go. And sometimes, right, when reaching out, like I have had the privilege of talking to people who are very busy, successful, done a lot with their lives. And the best part is, even then, they always consider themselves that they haven't done anything, because there's always scope to improve. But the one thing I've always been conscious about, right, is I have to protect their time. So if I'm asking a question, jiska answer internet pe hai, like iska kya price hai? That's not a, I'm not going to ask you that because I can Google that. What's your email? And I can find that email from your online presence, right? But what I can't find out in terms of writing, that I'll ask you. And the more prepared you are when approaching someone, the more work you put in when approaching someone, the more chances of you getting a response back, of you getting time. And I always tell people that typically the first conversation, generally people are willing to have. Like if you meet someone at an event, 5 minutes, you want someone wants to talk, you're willing to talk. But the next conversation, right, it depends on whether you were prepared for those 5 minutes or not, or we're just taking a random punt because that guy was in the front. You have nothing better to do. So you go and ask him a random question, which they give you a random answer for. So the more preparation you put when reaching out, the more better response you will get. And I feel that people sometimes confuse, like, you know, they just want to ask for the sake of asking rather than asking for the sake of solving a problem, but also believe that if you never ask, the answer is always no. And if you never ask, you'll never know.
So Karan, there's this thing called ignorance debt. Ignorance debt is, I am not making Amazon money or I am not making Jeff Bezos money today because Jeff Bezos knows something I don't. It's as simple as that. If I am a software engineer and I make, let's say, 50 lakh rupees a year in salary, then me as a farmer is not making that money because they know something that I don't. If I take away their job today, they'll get a new job tomorrow, which is because they know how to do software engineering, right? So their ignorance debt isn't. We used to have this ignorance debt because Vishrut and I, the main discussion we had in the beginning is how do we get founders in the first place, right? We are two idiots trying to build this podcast and why will people talk to us? And we were just reaching out to friends and family. Please connect kar do. Can you connect us to someone? And then one day, Raghav's episode, we did an episode with Raghav Kanoria. And he says that there are events which happen like almost on a daily basis. Go in the event and talk to people. And it is such a simple thought, right? And never hit us. And since then, Vishrut has been to event after event and he's just grinding like crazy. And we are getting incredible people such as yourselves, right? So the question I have for you is, what is something I believe to be true that is not?
You know, this is a Peter Thiel question. That like Peter Thiel in his book, 0 to 1, he says that he always asks this question that what is one thing that you believe in that 99% people will disagree with? So that I think that is the essence of the question. Right? What is one thing you believe in that is not true? See, it's a tough one. And I have given it a lot of thought. So oftentimes, right, when I'm interviewing people, and especially for my personal team, I will ask them to do a small form. And in that form, I'll have some basic but very interesting questions about how they operate as human beings. One is work-life balance or crazy success. Are you a 4 a.m. waking up person or 4 a.m. sleep person? Do you prefer to work in teams or are you more of an individual hero? So one of the questions is speed over perfection. And more often than not, right, I always feel that people prefer speed over perfection because that's how you get shit done. You get more and more stuff done, right? So one interesting thing that I found out, and after some reflection, is that like most others, I too prefer speed over perfection, because most things in life, perfect sucks. But there are a few things in life where perfection is very important. And you have to find those outlier events. For example, if I am reaching out to, say, a random person, right, on LinkedIn, I'll prefer speed. I have a templated message, which I'll put their name into, and I'll send it out. But similarly, if I'm reaching out to some stellar person who I want to make sure replies to me with an increased probability, I'm going to spend a few more minutes crafting up what in my mind is the perfect cold reach out. And that's where perfection matters a lot more. So that's an interesting nuance, which I believe most people have a contrarian view to. They prefer either speed or perfection, but I think it's neither. And a quick second thing, right, because I believe in bonus material, is also, a lot of people, I'm into service, and I serve with my time, energy, and capital. And बहुत लोग मेरे को बोलते हैं that why so early? Like, service का time तो after 50s है, तब करना, अभी तो venture building time, ये time, वो time. And for me, I always look at things that multiply my energy. So if I do something for 1 hour, am I motivated or am I turned on for many more hours? So I feel that oftentimes when people ask me, right, kya abhi to paisa nahi hai, so I say big deal. I'm not looking for money, but if you don't have money, then you have time money. So I'm a time billionaire or millionaire, right? So I can donate with my time. And just moving from that, also feel that similarly, right, when I'm doing a lot of things, people ask me, Karan, how are you so motivated? And my answer is that I'm not always motivated. Nobody can be. Nobody can keep showing up day in, day out with a 10,000% energy. But what they are is discipline to keep showing up and knowing why they have to keep going. So I feel a lot of people confuse motivation for discipline. And that's another contrarian view along with the service and the speed perfection part. And would love to turn it around to you guys. What is one thing that you guys believe in, which you think the world has a contrarian take on?
Dude, I am in full agreement with your motivation versus discipline thing. And again, goes back to Finding Nemo. Just keep swimming. And you will eventually reach wherever you have to go. You're not going to be swimming with the same speed every day, but just keep swimming.
I remember seeing Finding Nemo as a kid, but now I love that quote. Maybe I'm going to use it someday in the future.
Dude, it's so funny the way movies have come back and certain movies, certain parts of certain movies that just hit you at times and you're like, where was it when I was watching that movie? And it just strikes you. And I think in terms of contrarian worldviews, similar to what your service example, where people say, why so early? I read a lot of the Bhagavad Gita and I like to study it. And, I like to understand what it's trying to say. And Akhil and I have had many a conversation about a lot of the things that it speaks about. And one of the very famous sort of shlokas or verses in the Bhagavad Gita is this whole thing about doing something without being result oriented.
Yeah.
I read a very interesting interpretation of this, and that sort of opened me up and made me look at it in a very different way. So it's not that you just blindly go into something and keep doing it and say, okay, I'm not going to be focusing on the result. That's not what that verse is trying to say. It is saying, figure out your end goal. Chart your map to it. Say, I have to do 15 things to get to that point. Be sure those 15 things are the things that you have to do. And once you're sure, then don't think about the end goal. Then go about diligently doing those 15 things, because that is what you have planned and that is what you are sure of, rather than just being like, okay, yeah, I have to get there, but I'm not going to think about getting there. I'm just going to keep doing.
Trust the process
that you have mapped out in terms of your goal.
That's a beautiful take, and I absolutely love that interpretation. I think it's super apt to almost anyone's life. Akhil, what about you?
I've switched the role right now, being the host. I'm enjoying it, if I may say so.
Love it. So I'll give you mine, and I don't know how relevant it is, right? I don't know if it is correct or not, because again, we are nobodies. We are trying to build ourselves, right? I think that there is no such thing as this is good and this is bad. I think there is no such thing as this is right and this is wrong. I feel like in any kind of blanket statement, there is always a gray zone. When you say this thing is good, there are aspects to it which are good. There are aspects to it which are horrible. And as someone who is capable of conscious reasoning, as someone who is capable of asking questions, because I'm a human being and that's what sets me apart from animals or insects or plants or cells, whatever you want to take, I feel I should reason. Unfortunately, the experiences that I have been through, a lot of the times, anything that is a holistic belief, questioning that is treated as something wrong. Questioning that is treated as something offensive. And I really feel, as a contrarian believer, one must question everything, be it a supreme power such as God, be it a supreme belief such as religion, or be it something as simple as a sports team. Why do you like a sports team? Because I am a United follower is not an answer. Putting yourself in bucket is not an answer. Why do you like Hinduism? Because I am a Hindu is not an answer. I like Hinduism because the beliefs such as the Bhagavad Gita speak to me. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are things that speak to me and things that don't. And I am very cognizant of that. It's my belief. I don't know how far it'll take me. Like when people talk to me about religious texts, my mother likes to speak to me about religion a lot. So to answer her, instead of taking it on face value, I went in a quest to actually read stuff. So I read the Gita, I read the Mahabharata, I read these different texts. There are good things, there are bad things, of course, like anything else. Acknowledging the bad is a good thing. You know, acknowledging the costs are a good thing. Having a cost analysis is a good thing. So I don't know how much I've answered your question, but that is a personal belief of mine.
Very interesting. And I think these perspectives, right, are always interesting because oftentimes you have a strong opinion about something. But as this novel says, that have strong opinions, but have them loosely held so that you are open to interpretation of other people's idea and you can reform your opinion to be a more deeper, more meaningful to you. So I feel sometimes when you just ask people questions, right, your own perspective gets a lot stronger because there will be some things you resonate with which you might not have thought about and some things which you will hear which you don't believe in. And being able to be able to think for yourself and separate these two is also a very underrated skill. So really appreciate you guys sharing that.
Dude, I think that's where mediums like podcasts or sometimes I'm thinking about, you know, what is the point of a host? We are technically taking on the role of every viewer who we have and are asking you these kind of questions. And in that process, not only helping ourselves change our opinion or listen to a different opinion, maybe contrarian, maybe supportive, whatever it may be. But today, like a Nikhil Kamath, for example, he has 500,000 viewers. We have 400 viewers. But today, the 400 viewers are coming back because we, in some way, are asking the questions that they want to hear answers to. We're having the conversations that they want answers to. And I think therein, we have an even larger role of being that open. Today, you switched to the thing and you said, there are ways that when you ask a question, that question is coming from a place that, okay, yes, this is something that either I don't know about and I want to know about more about, or I know little about and I want to know more about, or I know a lot about, but I want another opinion, or I want to see what this other person has to say about this particular thing. So you have to understand where you're coming from. And unless you are in any of those three categories, you're not even going to ask that question.
So, and you know, Vishnu, just piggyback off that point, my favorite types of conversations are where I hear myself saying, tell me more about that. I didn't know that. Oh, dude, I had no idea. And oftentimes people would be very uncomfortable saying that, right? Because they're not okay looking that way. But I think being the dumbest person in the room is such a smart thing to do, because you are maximizing on knowledge capital, on time capital at that moment. And how I look at it is that be the dumbest person in the room. Once you become the smartest, find another room, right? So just keep progressing over time. And curiosity is one of those skills which I feel every human innately has. But sometimes you just get so bogged down with world, with drama, with other things happening around you that you lose it. But most successful people I know, I've either found them to be very curious in conversation. Either they read, love to read, the news, books, travel. They fail so much. So a lot of that has come from an innate place of curiosity to question people, question things, read more, or even try new things, right? So I think it's a fully underrated skill. And I also agree that to be a good podcast host, you have to be able to have those deep sections in the conversation, be able to also find width and so much more, which is not easy sometimes, but it's a skill that you develop over time. And one of my friends actually is a big podcaster, and he speaks about this skill of active listening, as to how when you say somebody's name, they like it and they get more comfortable. How when you nod your head while somebody's talking, they feel that, oh, the point is actually coming through clearer. How when you summarize somebody's point back to them, they feel, oh, they can talk more clearly and are better at conversation. So I think that, like, people think, oh, a podcast host, but it's such an underrated thing, right? You have to be able to talk intelligently, ask questions, be able to do deep dives when you're not clear, and also be able to remain in the zone. Like when you're talking to people, so often it happens you're having half an hour conversation, the guy is saying something, but you've lost it. Like you are thinking about where's the coffee at right now. So it's interesting, but
yeah, isn't everything a podcast? Everything we consume is like such a close, like it resembles a podcast, right? You're watching the news, that is a podcast. You're watching a conversation, that is a podcast. I like to say Gita is a podcast, right? And Arjun is the host and Krishna is answering the questions. So the answers are only as good as the questions, because Arjun is so intrigued. Oh, why this? And we lose our whys, but keep asking.
When I'm talking to people who are amazing people, right? Who've built multi-million dollar companies, maybe even billion dollar companies. So last week was with one of these gentlemen who had built a multi-billion dollar institution, right? I went to pick him from the airport, and he's the founder of Ashoka and 13 other universities, Ashish Dhawan. So while back in from airport, which was a 45-minute car ride, right? He was asking me on my take on education. And who am I? I just went to school and college. He's built a freaking university, which like thousands of kids in India apply to, and 40 countries now applying to Ashoka. So what I felt is he was trying to leverage off the point that there's a young student who is now become an entrepreneur sitting in the car. Let me ask him. And there was no need. He could have given me a 30-minute lecture and just, I would have been very happy about it. But when he asked me a question, I was even more impressed that, number one, what does he want to know? Number two, his humility was amazing. And number three, the conversation got deeper, because it just wasn't a one-sided conversation, which I feel most great conversations which convert to podcasts actually are, right?
It has to be two-sided, man. You look at, goes all the way from the Bhagavad Gita, where today Arjun is not just asking questions. He is explaining his background and then asking the question, saying that I am going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things. What is this? Or today I'm in this situation. How do I get out? What is, you know, and that's again something that we try to follow, where we're like, we don't want to sit here and make you feel like you're giving a lecture or make anyone feel like they're giving a lecture. Today, as long as we're having a conversation, like today, for example, we have spoken absolutely, I think, what, 2 minutes about your ventures so far. And we're like an hour or so into the conversation. So it's fine. Like that's because that's the way the conversation's flown. Like, so why not? So yeah, I think that way, just being cognizant. And also a lot of the times we are so involved and so consumed in thinking of how we are going to respond to a particular person, that we don't give them the time of day to let them finish their own point. So you, like, my sister pointed this out once, that some philosophy class that she was doing raised this point that we today as humans spent so long, once we hear the first bit of someone's point, in forming our own response and thinking about the response we are going to give, that we forget to listen.
Bolte, knowledge talks, wisdom listens. Being able to listen is one of the most phenomenal qualities, and being able to actively listen is even beyond that. And being able to actively consciously listen and respond back to take the conversation further is beyond that. And as Akhil mentioned maybe 20 minutes ago, right, that it's a skill that you can develop with more reps as long as you're doing those reps consciously. It's like I love weightlifting. And when I see people in the gym, they've been working for years, 5 years, 6 years, and they're still deadlifting wrong. It's just because they've been practicing those reps unconsciously. They're looking at lifting the weight, not practicing the movement. So when you get conscious and you are aware of what's happening around you, I think the world is your oyster and you can make magic happen.
By the main challenge is when you look at those people who are doing deadlifts wrong or who are doing squats wrong, it is so difficult to not go up to them and tell them that, you know, you're going to break your lower back. So it takes a lot of restraint because, you know, you want to go there and tell them you're doing a bad deadlift and it might really harm you. But then you think, yaar, who am I to tell them you're doing a bad deadlift? What if I am doing a bad deadlift, you know? So that becomes the whole process of subsiding your pride and holding back and practicing restraint and where you should, where you should not. And maybe you should have more results before you try to actually go out and like get someone on the collar.
What you're saying, every human goes through it, that they see something happen and they feel like responding or changing and they decide whether they want to do it or not. So two things which I feel is very important that moment is, one of my dad's friends, Ashish Agarwal, told me this, that Karan, in life, two things matter. First is manage your time. And once you learn to manage your time, manage your energy. So choose where you want to give your energy to, right? Because you have a limited amount of energy in a day. And second thing also is, like personally in life, I always look for signal over noise. So I'd much rather, because I have 10 minutes in the gym, I'd much rather focus on my breath, on correcting my own form, on seeing if I can load up more weight, taking rest, drinking water, then focus on somebody else who's deadlifting wrong. If they come and ask me, I'd be more than happy to, like, you know, give my two cents, not that I'm perfect, right? But that point about focusing on the signal over noise is very important. And to that extent, even beyond the gym world, like on WhatsApp groups, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, I never ever take part in random conversation. So recently I put up a LinkedIn post which got good traction. And whenever posts get good traction, they always get one or two, like, you know, hate type comments. So I could choose to respond to the hate comment and go at it, right? But for me, it's like, why waste my energy on that? And that's a noise. So I do two things. Either let it be and don't respond. I either delete the comment and block them, or I respond with two hearts. And people have asked me that, kya kar rahe? So I'm telling them, bro, one heart for you, one heart for your haters also. And then they become damn happy and saying, I didn't mean it that way. So choosing signal over noise, I think, is very important. And focusing on what you control, actually.
I remember when we had our meetup, someone had responded saying, oh, so many people, 33 guys and 3 girls. And when there was this whole thing, this discussion that was being had, that, you know, who's actually taken the time to count the numbers and like post. So people today have too much time on their hands and not enough to do with it. And yet we complain that we do not have enough time. So Karan, what is, you know, how you said you're doing so much. You have your venture, you have a couple of new startups that you're a couple of smaller companies that you're running. You're doing your social work, you're doing, you know, you're investing. You're here, there, and everywhere, a volcano of energy. So how are you doing this? What is your time management? How are you managing your time? Forget how you would say someone else should manage it. What are you doing?
So number one, I'm going to say is, I feel I can be doing more. And that's a very important perspective I feel like I need to have, is because if I feel like I'm doing too much, right, then I'm already at the brim. But I feel like I can do more. And the only way to do more is by managing my time better. So that is one take. But now talking about how I manage my time. So there are a few things I do. Number one is I use a calendar. Any event, be it my workout, be it the time I read my newsletter, be it the time I read books, I have meetings, reviews, it has to be on the calendar. So if someone wants to meet me and it's beyond a 10-minute conversation, like a random ask at work, they have to block time on the calendar so I can be prepared that this time is going towards them. The second thing I do is I also try to optimize for various things. So I spend about an hour and a half consuming information every morning, every day, not every morning. So 45 minutes of that is through podcasts, which I listen to only while I'm walking. And typically I'm walking late at night after dinner for 45 minutes on my terrace or like in random streets. Another example of optimizing for time is when I'm on my way to work is typically when I'm setting up my to-dos for the day. So whenever I don't require attention to be spent and I'm there physically, I try to divert my attention to that place. The third thing is I'm a big believer in setting hairy, audacious goals, like big, hairy, audacious goals, right? So every year on my personal website, I write my goals publicly. And it does two things. Number one, it gives me direction. Kya karna kya ye saal mein? Number two, it helps me meet other people chasing similar goals. And number three, it's just nice to document them because I've been documenting my goals for 4.5 years now, 5 years. And if my goal from 5 years ago, say, was I want to start a podcast. And if my goal this year also is I want to start a podcast, then it's no longer a goal. It's a dream. So usko hatao goal se ya karo bhai. Don't keep it on the goal. And last but not the least, right, is anything and anyone which I feel that is not the best use of my energy or time, I choose to say no. So initially, like, you know, growing up in Calcutta, I have a strong set of friends. So bahut bar hota tha, they would invite me Friday night, Saturday night, kya Karan, let's chill. I would say no. Unko bura laga, beko bura laga. But after a point in time, they stopped inviting me to certain places. And my real friends, right, like who deeply know me, knew that I'm doing something. It's not that I'm like, you know, chilling somewhere else and not coming with them. So knowing your why also is very important. So I guess then summarizing is number one is on the calendar bit. Number two is having those goals really helps. Number three is time blocking, giving yourself number of hours to complete a particular task. Number four is this the why bit as to why you're doing something. And last but not least, which what I would say is even managing priorities is important. So there is this interesting model that I read maybe 2 years ago, which helped me a little bit. Is in life, there are four burners. One is on health, one is on wealth, one is on friends, and one is on family. So to be successful in life, you can have three of the four burners on at the same time. And to be really successful, you can only have two of the four burners on at the same time. So you cannot have all four, family, friends, health, and wealth on. What you can do is switch one burner on and switch one burner off from time to time. So for example, if my best friend is getting married this month, that for me is a priority. I'm going to attend his wedding, right? But maybe if I'm in venture building phase, right now my friends aren't a priority. Not that I don't love them, but for this phase of my life, something else is taking a priority. And knowing your priorities in order, right? So for example, I know exactly if this podcast was clashing with something else, I would know in my Apple Notes which is a higher priority and which I want to consider first, what would I give up? So that also really, really helps. And sorry that I'm going on a little longer, but we spoke about this in the afternoon that it's crazy when people consider that they have 168 hours in a week. Random humans, like normal humans, spend about 50 hours or 40, 50 hours sleeping. So you have about 110 hours left. You spend about 40 hours working. So you still have about 70 odd hours left. You spend a few hours shitting, bathing, eating food. Say 20 hours gone there. You have 50 hours left. Most people spend those 50 hours doing random stuff, which they aren't doing because they want to do. So life is happening for them. They aren't making life happen. Like life is just happening and they are living it instead of them living life. So being able to use those 50 hours consciously, either by blocking out the noise, by deleting social media from time to time, saying no sometimes, leaving early from those parties when you don't feel like it, pursuing things that actually give you energy, playing sports, is how time management works sometimes, and you can always get better.
So in fact, going back to your point where you say you still think you can do more or you want to do more, Alex Hormozi mentions that one of the traits of super successful people is this deep-seated insecurity that they're not doing enough. So you have that one checked off.
And we'll never be doing enough, right? No matter where I am in life, we'll never be doing enough. And that's why you're always chasing. You might be happy, but not satisfied. And satisfaction only comes from fulfillment, which I feel comes from when you give back time, money, energy. And that's my why in that sense.
I'll stand on the shoulders of giants, right? I'll quote some Naval Ravikant here. So Naval Ravikant says that desires are innately a contract that you sign with yourself that I am going to be unhappy till I achieve this. So desire by itself is unhappiness, right? So when you say I am not enough or I need to do more, you are unhappy till you achieve that. Another thing that, like Alex Hormozi, our guy, like we love him. We want to get him on the podcast someday. Maybe hopefully we can build enough that we are worthy of his time because his time is very expensive. So if we get there, it'll be amazing. But he likes to say that knowledge is something that is only knowledge if you actually took action. So I'll build further on that. So there's this guy called Ask Win on YouTube, who is like a speech therapist, and he is one of the top five speech therapists on YouTube right now. He's doing exceedingly well. And he likes to say, I read a chapter in a book. And at the end of the chapter, I like to write in my notes at the end of the chapter that what is something that I will implement by the end of day today that I just read in this book, right? I feel your productivity hacks are absolute gold. And I feel like a lot of people could get a lot of benefit from them. I listen to this podcast. When I'm walking, I get this value. I like to take notes. I get this value. I like to keep myself, like socially, I post my goals. I get this value, right? How do I hold myself liable? That's the most difficult part. My sister will know everything about a good diet and then go out and get a dietitian. That, okay, his responsibility. My health is his responsibility. Or how do I do it? How do I discipline myself? It is so difficult and it's becoming even more difficult. Instagram, WhatsApp, YouTube, you know, Meet, blah, blah, blah. So many things. How do I focus? How do I establish that discipline? How do you establish that discipline?
So it goes back to the point that since you mentioned a couple of people, Alex, Naval, I'm a huge fan of, so I've read almost everything he puts out, right? Including his book, which I gift maybe 50 copies a year, The Almanac. So Joko Willink is a American Navy SEAL who has now become a creator. He also has a podcast, which is awesome. And he has a book, which I think is called Discipline Equals Freedom. And people think, why? Discipline is the opposite of freedom, right? Because you have to do things at a particular time. But when you do things at a particular time, the way you were meant to do it, you have freedom to do other things when you actually have other time. So I think discipline is a trait that you only build over time with practice. The second thing I also think is you can really build accountability with yourself by writing it down. Because words, you can think 10 thoughts, you can say multiple things, but when you write down stuff, it becomes very clear because you cannot erase it or change it. It's written, it's absolute. So writing becomes very important, and it goes to James Clear quote saying that writing is the antidote to confusion. So you might be thinking you want to do 10 things, but if I told you what are the 3 things you want to do and you can only write 3, I care about that. The other 7, leave it. If you don't do the 3 that you mentioned first, don't touch the other 7. And the third thing, which I also think, is finding an accountability group. So being around people, right, who remind you that, hey, Karan, you said you would do this. What's up? Where are you at? Just creates that gene that, you know, people around me in my friend circle, my family circle, will ask me because I've told them I'm going to do this, and let them ask me very sincerely because they're actually doing me a service by helping me become a better version of myself. And you have to know your why. Not everybody needs to work 80 hours a week or be hardwired to do X, Y, Z things, right? But if that is your why, then you do it. If that is not your why, don't do it. And Yoda says this, right, from Star Wars, that do or do not, there is no try. So either you do it because you want to do it, or you not do it because you don't want to do it. Don't tell me I'm going to try doing it, because when you say you're going to try doing it, right, even when you failed, you succeeded. So there is no accountability left. So I think discipline, the accountability group, the do or do not try, are some important factors that come to it. And knowing your why is at the basis of it, right? Because that's what will help you play the long-term game when you are in the dumps, not feeling like getting up, not feeling like putting in the extra hours, and wondering why you're doing this. And then knowing why you're doing this is very important.
So why are you doing what you're doing?
So, Vishnu, that's a question that I've asked myself a lot over the years. Why work hard? Today, I'm lucky that come from certain privileged background that some basics in life are taken care of. And what I realized over time, and this is actually through service, and I've been part of service since many years. Like, you know, even when I was in school, would spend time at the old age home opposite HHI in Calcutta, the hotel HHI. Was president of Nature Club in my school, so was very active in trying to conserve and preserve nature around us, doing various things, tree plantation. When I was growing up and my family was struggling financially, my parents got me a Daan Patra, which I still have from Friends of Tribal Society. It's a small box which said that 700 rupees can sponsor a child's education for 1 month. And the only goal was whenever you get coins, and that day I would get more coins because there was more cash transaction, now it's all UPI. You can put the coins in it. And every couple of months, somebody would come and collect the coins. And my parents were struggling then financially. Why would they do this? Because the social impact gene was embedded by them very early on. And even today, in my study table in my room, I have the Daan Patra. And me, my parents, even sometimes my domestic help puts loose change, 10 rupee coins in that thing. And what happened is when I went to the US, started the Impact Fund, we raised a good $500,000 for that fund. And when I came back to India, I got more deeply into service to this group called Social Venture Partners, which has about 500 partners across India who give their time, energy, capital to causes they believe in. And not because they want to network or they want to, like, you know, come on the newspaper, because it gives them energy. And when I joined this group and I worked more closely with a couple NGOs, and two in particular is what I work with, I realized that I am working hard and I'm doing all this stuff so that if I'm able to generate huge capital, alpha, and wealth, which in my mind, I have no doubt I will, I'm going to give a lot and mostly, hopefully, all of it or near all of it away, because I know hopefully that I'll bring my kids up in a manner that they are comfortable and they don't need my wealth to go on. I'll provide them education, provide them values, etc. Not that I'm looking to have kids anytime soon. But my why is actually found in service, that if I am privileged to a certain extent where my parents took care of some things for me, it is my duty and not my, like, it's my duty and my responsibility to be able to give back. And giving back is actually a very selfish thing, which is contrarian, right? Because when you give back, you get so much more in return. And it's crazy, right? Like, today we spend, say, 500 rupees on a Domino's pizza. That say 500 rupees can sponsor, like, you know, India 3 going child's education for 1 month, and can bring a wide smile on that person's face, right? So that is my why, Vishnu. And I write it publicly and say it openly, that hopefully before I die, and I'm pretty healthy, so I hope to live 100 plus, I'm able to impact 1 billion lives. So that's why I do what I do. And just as a precursor, there are such interesting things. For example, there is something called Living My Promise. So SVP India, Social Venture Partners, is led by the chairperson, Govind Iyer. Govind was a Wharton graduate, led one of the top CXO search and advisory firms in the world called Ergun Zender, advising the likes of the MNCs of the world. And he's just retired and he's joined Infosys as a board member. It sits on the board of Give India and a couple other incredible organizations. So Govind is a signee of Living My Promise. Living My Promise is a pact that you sign on, which says that you will give a majority of your wealth a way before you die to causes that you believe in. And nobody will put a gun to your head saying, why didn't you do it? But it's a community that you join and say that I'm going to give away a lot of it before I actually die, not after I die. Because after I die, bahut log karte trust ke through aise karke. So I think being around these kind of people, right, has inspired and motivated that there's life beyond shoes, cars. Like cars, shoes, all these things don't motivate me. What motivates me is impact, values, putting a smile on someone's face, and doing so much more. So yeah, the why is very strong. And by thinking of it over time and time again, I've gotten more used to it. And a big second why also is family. Like I want to be able to give my family everything that their heart desires, because they've given me everything that my heart desires to a great extent. And I think those two whys are strong enough that aage jaake zindagi mein kuch bada karenge.
So Karan, we have a tradition on the podcast, and the last guest has left you a question, and we would like you to leave a question for the next guest. So the question we have for you is, why are we not teaching the next generation hard cash and business? Why do we keep pushing kids into job mentality? And this is also for all the parents out there that we have this question, and we would love the answers in the comments below, but I want your views here.
I feel that for parents also, right? My mom sent me this reel a couple of days ago whenever I'm sharing that this is not happening as per what it should be happening, is that even for parents, it's their first time being a parent. And they do their best job. They try their best for being a parent because it's not easy. Though none of us have experience, so we are speaking of secondhand experience. Secondly, I feel is they were born in a different India, and we live in a different India. In the India they were born in, they were looking at surviving to a certain extent and making sure that they can put food, clothes on the back, have a shelter. And today's India is very different, wherein some of those things are already taken care of. So they still speak from the perspective that security to them is very important because they didn't have it while growing up. And thirdly, I feel is, it is important to have a venture, be more entrepreneurial, do all that good stuff, right? But I also feel experience is very important. For example, abhi mera ek dost hai from Calcutta. He spent 4.5 years at Nomura, which is the largest Japanese investment bank, first in Bombay for a couple years, and then got posted to London. So great experience. And he knows he wants to start a company of his own. But before he wants to start a company of his own, right, he's decided he's going to move back to India, and he's got a full-time job in a top-tier startup's founder's office role to get the right apprenticeship to build the venture whenever he's ready, with the idea that this, if you're able to impress enough people, nah, these Nomura bankers, your own manager, your own boss at the startup will fund you. So I feel even experience sometimes in job is great, because you tend to be able to learn on someone else's money, time. And when you're ready, then you take the plunge and dive deeper. But simultaneously, I also feel that no matter what you're doing, you should always have one small side project, side passion going on, so that you get that entrepreneurial flavor. And you don't have to be an entrepreneur, a founder, or a CEO to be an entrepreneur. There's something called entrepreneurship as well, right? Which happens inside the organization. So say that you have 7 products, or say that you have a podcast, you have a newsletter, and your Instagram. And now if you guys are doing the podcast, you are the CEOs of the podcast. If someone else is doing the Instagram, they're the CEOs of the Instagram. So on that regard, Abhi recently met one of the top guys at Ola Electric, who's on the board of Ola, and he knows Bhavish personally. And he used to be a top guy at Airtel before this, working with I think his name is Sunil Mittal, is the founder of Airtel. So he was mentioning that the number one skill Bhavish has, right, is that why Ola is able to grow so fast is because he can make people own his vision and feel like founders when he's the main founder, but they are also pseudo founders. So I feel those 3-4 things are important. As to your why, I think it's happening a lot because of where a lot of parents grew up in, and the India our parents grew up in, where security was a major concern. But we got to give them props, and I got to shout out to my parents as well, that we are what we are because of them. So we can question them all we like, but if they weren't around, we probably wouldn't be here as comfortable as we are.
What's your question?
So my question to the next guest is,